Welcome to Why Is This Good, a podcast by the Naples Writers Workshop. I'm Christine, and I'm here with John. Hey, John.
Hello.
Okay, it's my turn. I picked a story called Milk Wishes by Kristen Rupinian, who is the same author that wrote Cat Person, which we talked about maybe like more than a year ago. That's wild.
It was our first year, right?
Was it? It was our first year. Okay, with like Rob and everyone.
So Cat Person came up, like you and Rob had read it, and you brought it up as an example when we were talking about some other story. And oh, Gender Studies, the Curtis Sittenfeld. And because of that, I went and read it. And then a couple of weeks later, I was like, let me just bring that story in since we talked about it so much.
Yeah.
So there was a whole history of Kristen Rupinian as being like, and then we would refer back to it over and over again.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a huge influence on our first season or our first year podcast.
Yeah. No other influence outside of our podcast, but yeah, it was a really popular story. And so when I was trying to pick something this time, I was like, oh, I want to see if she's done anything new. And this was published in 2020, but I hadn't heard of it. So I was like, okay, this is probably a good example of, and it was billed a new story by Kristen Rupinian. So at this point, like Cat Person had come out and she was known.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, I'll read this new one by her. So I'm just going to read from the beginning. Milk Wishes had been dead for years before Ryan realized he had forgotten her name. That was in June when he was back at home for his mother's 67th birthday. The two of them were sitting on the stoop talking amiably about how they really ought to do something about the weeds when Ryan saw, by his feet, a dandelion that had turned white too early. He plucked it, and as he always did when he thought of dandelions, he saw a brief flash of Milk Wishes, her gold-white hair, the white blotch that spilled across her pale blue eye, her lips puckered out as though for a kiss. Without thinking too much about it, he blew the seed into the warm evening air, and then, maybe because he was at home, or because his mother was close to turning 70, or because his father had died the winter before and nostalgia was chasing him a bit more doggedly than it had in other years, he let his mind linger for half a second longer than he otherwise would have on that image of Milk Wishes, long enough to notice for the first time that in his head she was now only Milk Wishes, which of course was not her real name. Mom, he said, tossing the stem to the lawn, what was that blonde girl called who lived in the neighborhood when I was little? Oh, Lord, his mom said, that was so long ago. I have no idea. What on earth made you think of that? Nothing really, Ryan said. She used to call dandelions that had gone to seed Milk Wishes, and I always think of her when I see them. That's funny, Ryan's mom said. I remember you calling them that. All the kids did one summer, but I didn't think anyone in particular had come up with it. Her mouth bent downward in a way that signaled to Ryan that she was about to say something clever. I thought it was just kid slang, one of those words that used to spring up all around the neighborhood out of nowhere. She paused, very lightly, to give him the chance to finish her sentence. He could have, but he didn't, and so she said it for him, like dandelions. Anyway, yeah, so I picked it because when I look for these stories, it was like, oh, popular fiction. Oh, Cat Person. Oh, we've already done it. Oh, has Kristen done anything since? So I pulled this one. And I would have to, I thought about listening back to our Cat Person episode before today. And then I was like, I don't want to hear myself talk. So I don't know what made that episode, but I am very familiar with my stance on the Cat Person story, which is that, yeah, it's good writing, but it's also just, it was of like a timely nature. And for whatever reason, nobody had written about like the perils of online dating yet. So it was like this ripe topic. And the New Yorker was like, this is brilliant. And I'm like, no, New Yorker, you were just so dead, like hell-bent on publishing people. Yeah, like, and the New Yorker likes to publish people that have been published that like we're all kind of like familiar with. But I don't feel like when you read the New Yorker, like you're always reading stuff that feels like super modern. You know, it almost always feels a little like writerly in the sense that it's like of another artsier world. Like what could be artistic and exciting about
it's
online
New
dating?
Yorker,
you know?
Stories.
Yeah, like they have like a, they're fancy. I don't know.
Yeah, they're literary.
Yeah, and I feel like they were baffled by the popularity of Cat Person. You know what I mean?
Oh, maybe.
But anyway, my takeaway for like Kristen's writing in general was like, I was like so upset that it was so popular. I'm like, this is a really good story, but like there are so many good stories by writers her age interested in the same kind of things. And it's just that this one had been elevated to New Yorker status that we thought that it was incredible. Because we all have that vision of one day I'll be discovered.
Yeah.
And then it's like, when somebody else gets discovered, you're like, well, were they discoverable enough? Should they have been discovered? Was there anything? Do they have anything to back it up? So I just remember being like, so like riled up by that story. And I like it. And there's tons of reasons why I like it. So I was super curious though, to like read another story that she had written. And I still think she's a good writer. This story didn't like completely land for me, but I thought that it was like an interesting look at, and I didn't really get to this section of the reading, but at the beginning, we're tiptoeing into this idea that like, like you can remember things incorrectly and you can remember them so vividly, and then they can inform so much of your beliefs, you know? And Milk Wishes is a tangential character in his life, except that by the time we're done reading it, we realize that there's a lot of things that he's misremembered. And the way all those false memories coalesce has informed certain things about his life that he can't even pinpoint anymore. So like, I've written about this before because I got really into that book on sleep a while ago. And I think it like touched on it then, but I've also read stuff about how every time you recall a memory, your brain gets it a little more wrong. And you're not recalling the actual incident anymore. You're recalling your memory of it. It's like this elaborate brain science version of telephone. And so this is a cool exploration of that concept.
I had a similar reaction to this. I read it and I thought, this is really good. This is a well done story. It has it's well written. It has a great movement, a great arc. I enjoy it. I'm in it. And then I'm done with it. And You give this to the right person and they will love it.
Mm-hmm.
Give it to somebody else and they'll think, yeah, it's a good story. And they'll forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's one of those, I feel like it's well executed and it's a great story, but it's just a feeling thing. It's just like how an individual will react to it as far as like how, if it's really great or good. And so I was thinking about it along those lines, is like, well, then if someone brought this to the workshop in this state, what would I say about it? Like if I were someone who it didn't land with, like, particularly for the most part in the workshop, it's like, I recognize it's a great story. Even if I didn't find it to be the best story ever, I'll usually say good things and be like, yeah, this is well done. You know, I don't say rewrite it because I thought it was crap. I'll say it's well executed, but could it be improved? I mean, what could you do? It is what it is, you know? So it just made me think about writing as far as like, if you try to line up a story to like some kind of external rules of like what makes great fiction, you're not going to be able to do that without good stories, and you're going to miss good stories. You're going to misdiagnose stories. You're going to say this story is not as good as that one because of this and that and that, even though it's fine. It's a fine story and it works. There's nothing to change.
This is, I think, a good example of a fine story by a writer that is getting published, not on the merits of the story though, because I don't think it's a great story.
No, yeah, it's probably more, look, we have this person with a name who's putting out a book and we can get some publicity for our website by printing her story.
So when you just like were thinking off the top of your head, like could you in a workshop situation improve this? I just want to look at the ending again, because for me, it's like it didn't end because it, like you said, was just like a feeling story. For me, it felt like an exploration of an idea that you can misremember things and that can be frustrating. I guess I just, because there's enough at the beginning of the story where, in the section that I read, where he's the writer and the main character is thinking about like, oh, and you know, he blew out this dandelion, maybe because his dad left him or died or whatever, and maybe because of this, maybe because of that. Kristen is like touching on a number of things that he's experienced recently, you know, like this breakup, blah, blah, the pressure of the mom's birthday. There's seeds planted at the beginning of this story that you think are going to somehow relate by the end to the implications of realizing that you've misremembered Milk Wishes. But I didn't get that, like, I didn't know what the conclusion was supposed to be for the main character. Like, he's realizing that he has this false memory, and we leave the story at a time when he's mostly like kind of baffled by it and just realizing that it was false. But we haven't left this, we haven't gotten to the part where he like then applies that knowledge to his life, you know? It didn't feel satisfying that way. But there are things that like maybe like another sentence or two, maybe one other scene would have been like, and maybe she just did it earlier on with admitting that like he falsely remembers how his grandmother died. I don't know. I wanted there to be like a little bit more about like, okay, so if Milk Wishes wasn't that way, you know, what else am I misremembering now? Or like, I don't know.
This is, I mean, I was tracking what was happening because most of this is happening in the character's head. So there's like, talks to his mom one night and he goes for a walk in a meadow. Ryan took a walk by himself in the meadow behind his house. And then he walks. He's thinking about Milk Wishes. He's thinking about all this stuff. Comes home, drinks. He continues thinking, passes out at some point, wakes up and has a conversation with his mom. And that's like, that's what happens. But the entire arc of it is like in his head, is in his thoughts, right?
Yeah.
So I guess that's why your reaction is like, it seems to be just about this idea of false memories. Like that seems to be the only thing that really moves in it is like he realizes a memory is false.
Yeah.
And then you can point to other memories that he kind of like that hint that that's a possibility that he didn't pick up on. But it, and then the little thing about his girlfriend, kind of like he wants to hide that from his mom. Like he doesn't want to tell her that his girlfriend, they broke up. So you assume like that's on his mind.
It could be something that he falsely remembers down the line. Like, no, I told you, or no, we hadn't broken up at that point.
Yeah, who knows? But like the main thing is just the milk wishes memory, right?
Yeah.
That's the story. That's what this is about. Because it even starts like, what's the problem the story introduces in the first paragraph? Oh, it was Ryan realized he had forgotten her name, the name of milk wishes. Like, what's her real name? So his whole journey is like, that's like the inciting problem for the story is I got to remember her name. And so his whole thought process is just trying to spin that out and figure out what her name is. Turns out it's a red herring as a problem. It's like, that's not the problem that gets resolved. You find something else at the end.
Yeah.
But that's like, that's what the story is about, right?
Right.
You know, and this is one of those reasons I say it's well-made story and it's good and it's readable and you can get a great experience out of it because it does focus on that. It doesn't reach for too much else.
Yeah, exactly. It's contained.
Yeah. It doesn't try to be more than it is. I mean, it flirts with like deeper questions, but you know, any kind of story, any kind of rumination will flirt with deeper questions. So I guess the question, like, you know, our podcast question, why is this good? Is it's good because it does that. It focuses in on it, right?
Yeah. And because this is like one of those, like we said, like kind of relatable concepts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Where you misremember things. Like,
yeah. What you said about memories, like people just, I see the phrasing when you talk about memory. So often people talk about remembering the past and like they bring up the past when they talk about memory. It's like every time you remember something, you're remembering it in the present. You're not visiting the past somehow. It's happening to you now. The memory is happening in your brain as you're remembering it. And that's why, like you said, it rewrites your memory each time is because you're reliving it. You're living it in the present as a memory and you're rewriting it. So you never go back to the past. We have no access to the past. Our memories are always in the present. And you know, that's just a semantic way to talk about it, but it's a good piece of drama to show that playing out in a story.
Yeah. She has a way with words and like there's a tone to this story. There's a mood to this story of sad sackness.
I was thinking about voice and tone because this is told in the third person, right? So you kind of think of it as being like a removed narrator. There's not really a clear speaker, right? It's just narrated. But she uses this line, and I don't know if this is a generational thing, right? But uses the word though as a conjunction, you know? He told his mother he was going outside to call his girlfriend Chloe, though Chloe had actually moved out of their shared apartment the week before. And then like the very next sentence is like waiting to tell her about the breakup until after the birthday weekend. Though he knew deep down that his mother's passions for her birthday could not be spoiled. I know you can use that in speech and I hear it all the time, but when I read it, it's like a diction level thing, you know?
Yeah.
If you use it in writing, it feels like written speech at that level of diction. It's not like more, it's not in a higher speech you use, however, outside of his girlfriend, Chloe. However, Chloe had actually moved out.
Or but,
or something like that.
Even however is like literary.
Well, yeah, that's even high. That's like, you have to be.
It's not spoke. We don't say however.
Yeah. However, I remember teaching a class and I was like, don't use though in the middle of a sentence, you know, because, you know, though comes from although. And although I think it was supposed to be at the beginning of a sentence. Although Chloe did this, something else. It like introduces two clauses that contradict each other. You don't put it in the middle, but we do. We do when we talk. Anyway, this just made me think about the diction level of narrators and like how that kind of usage might be just invisible to like a millennial or younger. Because I know the language is changing, so we don't even think about these things sometimes. I read too many old things, so.
Yeah. But there's something about the fact that it's not like it's intentional in a way that for me reeks of I am in writer mode. It's like pretentious.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
And I don't even necessarily think that it's like intentional.
It's like voice. You're trying to do a voice.
Yeah. We all kind of do that when we write. We're like,
yeah,
now I am writing.
It's not even like a very specific voice. It's just kind of like a vague, like, let me give this a color of voice without making a voice a clear voice.
So we're talking about, I just want to read part of that paragraph again because we got caught up on the I just liked this sentence. It was just a long sentence. Without thinking too much about it, he blew the seeds into the warm evening air, and then, maybe because he was at home, or because his mother was close to turning 70, or because his father had died the winter before and nostalgia was chasing him a bit more doggedly than it had in other years, he let his mind linger for half a second longer than he otherwise would have on that image of milk wishes, long enough to notice for the first time that in his head she was now only Milk Wishes, which of course was not her real name. There's a tone to that. That's like one of the first sentences in the story. It's this like kind of winding thing. It does a really good job of capturing what is this feeling of stream of consciousness, right? From that narrator. I like sentences like that. When I read a story that like kind of kicks off that way and it's like this long, thoughtful sentence, it sounds pathetic the way I'm trying to describe it. I don't know. It just kind of like sets you up for like what's going to be like a pretty introspective story. This is a story that happens in his head, you know?
Yeah, there's something to that. I know people often just like reduce Faulkner to like, oh, he wrote long sentences.
Yeah, but
what he was doing was like playing with present and past and like the way they intermingle and like memory. It's all in there. So I think like a kind of long sentence that lets you travel through a lot of different things before you get to the end of it just plays into the ability to explore memory, because you're exploring so many like tangents could come up, you know, like just like asides and, you know, little parallelisms and stuff like that. You get to play with the contrapositions of things. And you know, if you have like a parallel structure, you can counterpoise things. And that lets you just play with like how things are connected. And that leads right into memories and stuff. I'm just trying to find like a practical reason
why I like that.
Yeah. Why that tone is suggestive from a long sentence like that. And I think that's probably what it does, is because of the grammar. The grammar allows you to just visit lots of different places.
I'm sure I've talked about this before on the podcast, but one of the lessons that I learned in this workshop that I did, it was like grad school level workshop stuff. This was one of the first workshops that I took, and I remember it a lot because I felt like I came away from it with tangible lessons. And one of the things the guy talked about was like intentionally varying your sentence structure. And who knows if Kristen had to intentionally vary it, or if she is one of these writers that just finds herself writing sentences this way, you know? Because I think that's when we talk about being able to teach writing, there are certain people that just kind of do this. And maybe they couldn't even explain to you that they did it or why or where they chose to do it. You know, there's some people that just like naturally can write beautifully. But if you are one of these people that needs to be intentional about it, one of the things you can be really intentional about is to write varied sentence structure. And whatever this example that we had to learn, it was like an inverted clause. Like instead of saying like, she took her umbrella out that day because it was rainy, you would say like, and because it was rainy, she took her umbrella with her. Something stupid like that. And it sounds cool. The lesson was not to include those sentences. It was like to be intentional about your structure.
There was a line in the Three Bears that I always read to the girls. It was, and then through the woods and home came the three bears, or something like that. It's like totally just reversed. Instead of saying, and then the three bears came home through the woods, you know, came through the woods and home. They just flipped the whole thing. It creates something different. It's a different feeling when you read it in different orders.
Yeah. So when I see sentences like that, I think to I notice them. And then I can't help but go in reverse. Like, did she intentionally do this? Did she have to pause and decide to do this? Or what if she said it differently?
The biggest thing about changing your sentence structure is figuring out where you're pointing the reader to look. You know, like with the three bears thing, it's like, let's start in the woods. And then through the woods, you're looking in the woods and home, look at the bear's house. Came, something's coming, the three bears. And then you see the bears coming, emerging out of the woods. And that's like a dumb example, but that's the kind of thing that I think like as you're structuring your writing is like how you're guiding the reader's eyes or thoughts or like, you know, attention is like, what are you constructing the experience to be moment to moment, word to word? And in order to do that, you have to change your word order. You have to change your sentence structure from time to time.
Right.
So being aware, not even being aware, but just having a feeling for like the different possibilities that language can have.
Yeah, it's more that like there's possibilities here. You don't have to say it this way every time.
Yes.
I think my takeaway from this story, I started to say this earlier, I wrote something for the workshop forever ago, and it was a story, like a true story for me about how I knew that every time I had this memory of like an ex of mine, that I was misremembering it, but I was like aware of it, you know? So I tried to write a story where I had visited like iterations of this memory. I didn't pull it off or anything, but I'm fascinated by this. And I think it's really ripe for this kind of fiction, where fiction happens in a character's head. It's like, you're not going to see this on a film, you know, or a TV show where it's just the character wondering if they remembered something right. But I think it's a really cool concept. And my takeaway would be to play with this concept. She's not the first person to have done it. She didn't come up with this, you know, it's not copying her. But I think it's really interesting. And in the same way that we talk about interesting dialogue, sometimes having two characters misunderstand each other, you know, this is an interesting type of conflict. You know, it's not this like massive plot where you've misremembered something, but it could be. And it's so common and it's so easy to play with.
Yeah, I thought I could have a similar takeaway. I just like the idea of playing with memory as a story thing. And, you know, part of what this story does with the memory is he thinks of this memory as being like self-defining, right?
Yeah.
And to find out that it's not right is kind of like an attack on him.
Yes.
You know, like, that's why he's like, so mad at his mom.
Yeah.
It's like, no, this is me, mom. You're disassembling me, not my dad.
But that's what I mean when I say he's like a sad sack. This is a guy who spent the entire story just like ruminating and all his thoughts are important and all his trauma is unique. And this is, like you said, an attack on him to say, are you sure?
Yeah. But that kind of thing, like memories can help define characters. So I think that's such a good way to build a character and to undermine it by showing the reader that it's not a true memory.
Right.
What a great way to undermine a character or to like say something about a character. You know, you're not being overt necessarily even. Just show it through some way, some means like this, where he confronts his mom or some other way in a different story where you realize, oh, his memory's not right, but he's basing his entire life on it.
Right.
What an interesting thing about him. A lot of fertile ground for storytelling in that domain of memory.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider joining our Patreon. Your support helps us keep the show running. Find out more at patreon.com/whyisthisgoodpodcast. And for industry news, writing tips, and great short fiction, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/Naples Writers Workshop. You can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter at napleswritersworkshop.com.